The Facts of Life, with Paul Rees, Robert Lang and Melanie Hudson, and Doug Bogard as the narrator.
It was Henry Garnet's habit on leaving the city of an afternoon to drop in at his club for an hour or two before going home to dinner. He was a good-natured fellow, rarely out of humour. So when, on this occasion, he seemed distracted, if not positively bad-tempered, his friends were concerned.
You seem out of sorts, Henry. Markets misbehaving?
Quite the reverse. Even the suckers are making money.
And how's your boy, Henry? I see he's done pretty well in the tournament.
No better than I expected.
When's he back from Monte?
He got back last night.
Did he enjoy himself?
I suppose so, Basil, I suppose so. All I know is that he made a damn fool of himself.
Did he now? How did he do that?
Geoffrey, I'd rather not talk about it, if you don't mind.
Oh, sorry, old boy. Bad as all that, was it?
No, not really. It's just...
Oh, come on, Henry, old man. What the devil's up with you? You're like a bear with a sore head this evening. Go on, drink up. Let me stand you another.
Oh, all right.
Geoffrey?
Thanks very much, Basil. Don't mind if I do.
Same again. Tony, all round, please.
Coming up, sir.
Now, Henry, old chap, what on earth's bothering you?
Well, to tell you the truth, I'm bloody annoyed.
Oh, you don't say.
Don't laugh. It's not funny. You'd be none too pleased, I can tell you, if the same thing had happened to you.
Tell us all about it.
As a matter of fact, I'm in a damned awkward situation. Not to say embarrassing. A bit of advice wouldn't come amiss.
Well, you've come to the right shop, haven't you? If a king's counsel and a permanent secretary can't help you, who can? Mm. What's the problem?
It's that damned boy of mine.
He was speaking about his only son, Nicholas. Nicky was just 18. He positively adored the boy. Nothing was too good for him. You can hardly blame him. Nicky was the sort of son anyone might have been proud of. Over 6 foot tall, athletic, handsome, he had no trace of the arrogance that often accompanies good looks. On the contrary, there was a sort of modesty about the young man that was very attractive.
Yes, yes, but why, Mr. Garnet, do you want to come to Peterhouse?
May I be quite honest, sir?
It is often to be recommended, not invariably in my experience.
I think this is an occasion that calls for it, sir. I've set my heart on Cambridge. My father was up, you know.
Ah, but not, unless I am mistaken, at Peterhouse.
No, Dr. Roberts, but it's Peterhouse's position in lawn tennis that I'm interested in. I believe I might be able to help the college keep up its record of success.
Oh, you are a tennis player, Mr. Garnet.
Yes, since I was 14. I was captain of tennis at school.
Peterhouse certainly has acquired an enviable reputation in the game recently. Do you think you're good enough to get into the university team? We have won tennis blue, you know.
Indeed, yes.
Well, obviously I'd like to, sir. It's not beyond the bounds of possibility, provided I keep at it. My father very much wants me to play for Cambridge. He's had me coached by professionals for the past 3 years. I've won quite a few tournaments, in my own age group, of course.
Tennis, yes. However, Mr. Garnet, one does not come up to Cambridge solely to play games, whatever one's standard. I trust you would intend to apply yourself in your chosen field of study, which is...
Modern history, sir.
Ah, yes, of course. Well, reasonable results in the entrance exam, reasonable, yes. What do you say, Dr. Roberts? I think we can offer Mr. Garnet a place, don't you?
We would expect you to take up residence next October. Will that be convenient, Mr. Garnet?
Oh, indeed it would, sir. My father will be delighted.
Excellent, excellent. Practice hard at the tennis, Mr. Garnet. Mm. The college will expect great things of you.
Nicky had all the qualifications for becoming a great tennis player. He was tall. He had a long reach, he was quick on his feet, and his timing was excellent. He had a powerful serve with a nasty break that made it difficult to return, and his forehand drive, low, long, and accurate, was deadly. His backhand was his weakest point, and all through the summer, before he went up to Cambridge, Henry Garnet made him work on it under the best coach in England. At the back of his mind, though he didn't ever mention it to Nicky, he cherished a further ambition, to see his son chosen to represent his country in the Davis Cup.
Your son Nicky is pretty good, isn't he, Garnet? What's he up to at the moment?
He's up at Peterhouse, doing quite well. He went straight into the college team, rather hoping to play for Cambridge next season.
Well, why don't you let him go down to Monte Carlo and play in a spring tournament?
Oh, come on, Brabazon. I don't think he's good enough for that. He's not 19 yet. He wouldn't stand a chance against all those top hole players.
Oh, I don't know. Oh, Austin and Van Cram and so on would knock spots off him, of course. But he might snatch a game or two. Selection's a bit of a brand tub, but if he found himself drawn against some of the smaller fry, there's no reason why he shouldn't win two or three matches.
Well, that's very flattering, coming from the captain of the England team, but no, no, I really...
No, he's never been up against any of the first-rate players, has he? But it'd be excellent experience for him. He'd learn a lot more than he'd ever get out of those seaside tournaments you enter him for.
I appreciate your concern, Brabazon, but it's quite impossible. I'm not going to have him leave Cambridge in the middle of term. First things first. I've always impressed on him that tennis must never interfere with his studies.
When exactly does his term end?
Oh, the end of the month, I believe. Why?
But good heavens, Garnet, you'd only have to cut about 3 days. Surely that could be arranged.
I appreciate your taking such an interest in my boy, Brabazon. But really, it's out of the question.
Let me put my cards on the table, Garnet. As non-playing captain for England, I'm in a bit of a hole. The two of the men we were depending on have let us down. We want to field as good a team as we can, obviously. The Germans are sending their best players, so are the Americans.
Nothing doing, old boy. In the first place, Nicky's not good enough. And secondly, I don't fancy the idea of sending a kid like that to Monte Carlo without anyone to look after him. If I could get away myself, I might consider it, but as it is...
Well, I'll be there. I'll keep an eye on him.
You'll be busy. And besides, it's not a responsibility that I'd asked you to take. Nicky's never been abroad in his life. I wouldn't have him in his peace of mind all the time he was there. And neither would his mother.
But it's terribly flattering, Henry. I mean, the fact of the matter is that the captain of England has offered Nicky a place in the team. I know it's by default, as it were, but still, I mean...
Yes, it's flattering. But, of course, it's out of the question.
Monte Carlo would be a wonderful opportunity.
Well, good heavens, Dotty, the boy's only 18.
Yes, 18, and very responsible. What makes you think he'll suddenly get himself into trouble?
I thought you would be utterly opposed to the idea.
Well, I'm not.
But what about his work? Do you think he should cut the end of term?
What possible difference can 3 days make? It seems a shame to rob him of a chance like this. I'm sure he'd jump at it if you asked him.
I dare say he would. But what would his tutors say? Oh, no, no. I haven't sent him to Cambridge just to play tennis. I know he's level-headed, but it's silly to put temptation in his way. He's much too young to go to Monte Carlo by himself. Plenty of other opportunities will come his way. Now, let there be an end of the matter.
It's the most marvellous opportunity, Nicky, but it would mean missing the last few days of term. Mm. Of course, your father doesn't know I'm phoning you, so do be discreet, darling, won't you?
Oh, good God, I can't believe it. The England team.
Your father objects for 2 reasons, darling. Mm. He thinks you're too young to be let loose in Monte Carlo on your own, and he doesn't want you to miss the end of term. Well, you can't do much about your age, but I know what I'd do about the other. If I were you, I'd go directly to your...
Dear father... I went to see my tutor, Dr. Abbott, earlier today. Did I ever tell you he's a great tennis enthusiast? I passed on the news about Colonel Brabazon's offer that Mother mentioned to me yesterday. He immediately arranged an interview with the master, and I'm just back from seeing him. The master knows Colonel Brabazon fairly well. He seemed thrilled that I'd been offered a place in the England team. He says he's raised no objection at all if I were to miss the last few days of term. It would be a great honour for the college and for the university. And, of course, it would raise my chances no end of playing for Cambridge next term. I could be a Blue by the end of my first year. If you could just stretch a point this once, I promise faithfully that I'd work like stink all next term to make up. Do let me go, Father. Chances like this don't come about all that often. All my love to Mother, Nicky.
Read that. I don't know why you thought it necessary to tell Nicky something I told you in confidence. It's too bad of you.
Confidence, Henry. You didn't say. I thought it would please him to know that Colonel Brabazon had such a high opinion of him.
All you've done is to unsettle the boy thoroughly.
I don't see why one should only tell people the disagreeable things people say about
them. Oh, do stick to the point, Dorothy. You've put me in an impossible position. If there's anything I hate, it's for the boy to look on me as a spoilsport or a tyrant.
Then don't be one.
Oh, Christ almighty!
His wife had an almost irresistible urge to burst out laughing, which she struggled hard and successfully to resist. The battle was clearly over. How easy it was to get men to do what you wanted. Henry Garnet held out for 48 hours for appearances' sake, and then he yielded. A week later, Nicky came to London. He was to start for Monte Carlo the next morning.
Now, Nicky, you know I don't feel quite comfortable about letting you off to a place like Monte Carlo at your age, practically by yourself.
Yeah, I know, Father, but you're worrying unnecessarily, I promise you.
Perhaps. I don't want to play the heavy father, but there are three things I want to warn you about very specifically.
Only three?
Nicky, I'm serious.
Three things. Yes, Father.
One, gambling. Don't gamble.
I'm not to gamble.
The second is money. Don't lend anyone any money.
I'm not to lend anyone any money.
And the third is women. Don't have anything to do with women.
Not ever?
Nicky.
On this trip. I'm not to have anything whatever to do with women on this trip.
That's right. Now remember, gambling, lending money, and women. Bear those three things in mind, and you won't come to much harm.
I will, Father. I promise.
There's a good chap. I know something about the world, and believe me, it's sound advice I'm giving you.
I won't forget it.
Ladies and gentlemen, please. We have done well. England has no reason to be ashamed of our performance here in Monte Carlo. Admittedly, we aren't coming home with the men's singles trophy, nor yet the women's. But we aren't coming home empty-handed, are we?
No, we're not.
We bring the mixed doubles trophy back with us. And the knowledge that we have upheld England's honour on the tennis court. I just want to congratulate everybody who's run and volleyed and sweated for England out there during the past 10 days. Very well done.
Thank you.
We go back home tomorrow. And please don't forget, the plane leaves at 10 a.m. prompt. Cars for the aerodrome are booked for 9. No laggards, please. But for now, let's just enjoy our last night here in Monte!
Last night in Monte. Well, there's only one place to go.
Have you been to the sporting club yet, Nicky?
Well, no.
Oh, but you must. You can't leave Monte without visiting the club.
Oh, I don't know, Phil.
Of course you're coming. You just tag along with us. Yes. We'll show you the ropes.
Well, I don't mind seeing it, but I'm not gambling.
You don't have to, old man. Now, come on. So, what do you think?
Well, it's an experience. It's quite exciting, I suppose. They all look so dedicated. Ah, Phil, any luck?
Afraid not. Still, it was worth a try.
And what about you, Nicky?
Oh, I'm not gambling.
What? Not even one little flutter?
Oh.
It's idiotic to leave Monty without trying your luck. I mean, what's 100 francs one way or another?
Anyway, I don't understand what they're doing half the time. I couldn't get the hang of that Trente Quarante at all. No, I'll just wander around and watch. You two go off and play if you want.
Well, if you're not going to play, you can't come to much harm. See you later. Cheerio, Nicky.
Bye. And don't look out for me. I might go back to the hotel soon.
Nicky strolled over to where they were playing roulette. He stood for a while looking at the loser's chips being raked in by the croupier and the piles of coloured chips being pushed across to the lucky winners. It was impossible to deny that it was all terribly thrilling. And Philip was right. It did seem silly to leave Monty without putting something on the table just once. It would be an experience. And at his age, you needed all the experience you could get.
Gambling, lending money, and women. Bear those three things in mind, and you can't come to much harm.
I will, Father. I promise.
He reflected that he hadn't promised his father not to gamble. He promised him not to forget his advice. Not quite the same thing, was it?
Monsieur Dame, faites vos jeux.
He took a 100-franc note out of his pocket rather shyly and put it on number 18. He chose 18 because it was his age.
Les jeux sont faits.
With a wildly beating heart, he watched the wheel turn. The little white ball whizzed about like a small demon of mischief.
Rien ne va plus.
The wheel went round more slowly. The little white ball hesitated. It seemed to stop. It went on again.
18 rouge, père et manque. You win, monsieur.
A lot of chips were passed over to him, and his hands trembled as he took them. He was so confused that he never thought of putting anything on the following round.
18 rouge, père et manque.
Ha, you win the game, monsieur.
Me? I hadn't got anything on.
But, yes, your original stake. They always leave it on unless you ask for it back. Didn't you know?
No, I didn't.
Another pile of chips was pushed across to him. Nicky's head reeled. He counted his gains. 7,000 francs. A strange sense of power seized him. This was the easiest way of making money that he'd ever heard of.
You're in luck, monsieur.
I can hardly believe it. It's the first time I've ever played.
Oh, then that explains it. Lend me 1,000 francs, will you? I've lost everything I've got. I'll give it back to you in half an hour.
All right. Take it.
Ah, vous êtes très gentil, monsieur. Half an hour.
You'll never see that again.
Huh? I suppose not.
Gambling, lending money, and women. Bear those three things in mind, and you can't come to much harm.
What a silly thing to do. And somebody he'd never seen in his life before. But the fact was, at that moment, he felt such a love for the human race that it never occurred to him to refuse. Anyway, he still had 6,000 francs. He'd just try his luck once or twice more. At the end of an hour, after various ups and downs, having experienced such thrills as he'd never known before, he found himself with so many chips that they wouldn't go into his pockets. He went to the changer's office and gasped when 20,000-franc notes were spread out before him. He had never had so much money in his life.
You went on winning, Essie.
Oh, hello.
I've been looking for you everywhere. I was afraid you'd gone. I didn't know what you'd think of me. So here's your 1,000 francs, and thank you very much for the loan.
Thank you very much.
What is the matter?
Well, to tell you the truth, I never expected to see the money back.
But what did you take me for? Did you think I was a coquette?
No, of course not.
Do I look like one?
No, you look marvellous. Adorable. Are you here all alone?
Unfortunately, yes. My husband is in the administration in Morocco. It's so dull there, he thought I needed a change. So I came to Monte Carlo for a few weeks. I go home on Saturday.
And I'm going back to England tomorrow.
Ah, yes, of course. The tournament ended today, didn't it? I saw you play, you know, 2 or 3 times.
Did you? I don't know why you should have noticed me.
Ah, well, you've got beautiful style. And you look very good in shorts. It was a little of both. So, you're Nicky, what is it?
Garnet.
That's it. I knew it was a precious stone.
And you?
My name is Melanie.
Melanie. Ah, oh, that's a beautiful name.
Thank you. Tell me, do you ever go to the Knickerbocker?
No, I've never been there.
Oh, but you must. Don't leave Monte Carlo without one visit. Come and dance a little. To tell you the truth, I'm starving. I'd adore some bacon and eggs. What do you say?
All right.
You know, Nicky, you are a wonderful dancer.
But you're so easy to dance with. You're as light as a feather.
Are you enjoying yourself?
Oh, more than I could ever have dreamed. I'm so glad we met, Melanie. This, everything, it's unforgettable.
Nicky? Has anyone ever told you you're very good looking?
I don't think so.
Oh, but you are.
I suppose if I kissed you in front of all these people, it wouldn't be quite nice.
I'm sure it would be very nice indeed. But what do you think people would take me for?
No. No. Oh, well. I suppose I'd better be getting back. I've got to be up at 7.
Will you drop me off at my hotel on your way?
Of course. Let's get a taxi.
I'll keep the change.
I'll walk from here. I'm further down the Corniche. The air will do me good after that stuffy atmosphere.
Oh, come up, Nicky. Why don't you? I'm on the top floor. There's a marvelous view of the Côte d'Azur and miles out to sea. It's really quite spectacular.
Well, only for a minute.
Come in. Oh, Nicky.
Melanie. Darling Melanie. You're adorable. Oh,
Sherry.
Gambling, lending money, and women. Bear those three things in mind, and you can't come to much harm.
I will, Father. I promise.
Now, Nicky was a light sleeper. The least sound was apt to wake him. 2 or 3 hours later, he suddenly opened his eyes. Moonlight was streaming into the room, but that wasn't what had wakened him. Someone was moving about. He was about to say something when he saw Melanie walking very cautiously round to his side of the bed. He snapped his eyes shut as she looked towards him. Then, through half-open lids, he saw her making for the chair he'd laid his clothes on. She waited for an interminable minute. Then, very slowly, very quietly, she took up his coat, slipped her hand into the inside pocket, and drew out all those beautiful 1,000-franc notes. Now she stepped with infinite caution across the room. On a small table, in the window, a cineraria was growing in a pot. As Nicky watched, she took hold of the plant and lifted it out. She put the banknotes in the bottom of the pot and replaced the plant. And then very slowly she crept across the room and slipped back into bed.
Chéri.
You can imagine how I felt. She was nothing but a rotten thief and a tart. I'd been taken for a ride. She must have been laughing up her sleeve at me the whole time. But I was damned if she was going to get away with it. Of course, I couldn't kick up a row in a strange hotel. Anyway, I couldn't prove that the money was mine, could I? If she swore it was hers, I'd be hauled off to the police station, and there'd be the devil of a fuss. I lay there, thinking it through, and soon I could tell that she'd fallen fast asleep. It was then that I had an idea. Darling? Darling?
No answer. No movement. She was dead to the world. He slipped out of bed and went across to the cineraria. He pulled up the plant and felt at the bottom of the pot. There they were. His fingers closed on the banknotes and he pulled them out. Then he replaced the pot. He went across to his clothes and put the bundle into his coat pocket. And then very quietly he got dressed. A few minutes later he went over to the door. Very, very gently he turned the key in the lock.
Hello? Who's there?
It's only me, darling.
No.
It's 6 o'clock. I've got to go. I was trying not to wake you.
Oh, Chéri, I forgot. You have your plane to catch.
Yes, I haven't packed or anything.
Come here. Kiss me, Nicky.
Darling.
You're a sweet boy and a marvelous lover. Thank you for a wonderful night.
I'll never forget you, Melanie. All my life I'll remember you, and last night, and this moment. You've become part of my life. Even if we never set eyes on each other again, I'll never forget you.
Darling Nicky, what a lovely thing to say. Now don't make a noise when you go out. The hotel people don't like it. Oh, I'm so sleepy.
Then you go right off to sleep again.
Bon voyage, Nicky.
He made his way back to his own hotel, had a bath, and enjoyed a hearty breakfast. Then he got into the car that was waiting to take him to the aerodrome on the other side of Cannes. It was a lovely drive. The road, as far as Nice, ran over the hills, and below him was the blue sea and the coastline. The car passed through Nice, bright and friendly in the early morning, and presently came to a long stretch of straight road that ran by the sea.
My mind went back to Melanie, lovely and deceitful. I thought about the money and how I'd nearly lost it. When I changed my suit earlier that morning, I'd stuffed the bundle of notes into my hip pocket. Now I pulled it out and counted the notes one by one.
Something very strange had happened to those notes. There should have been 20 of them. 20 1,000-franc notes. There weren't 20. There were 26. He couldn't understand it at all.
I counted them again, Father, and again, and each time I couldn't make the number come to less than 26.
Had you won more at the table than you realised?
Well, I asked myself the same question, but then I remembered the man at the changer's office slowly counting out 20 notes, one by one, and I checked it afterwards myself.
So what the...
The explanation suddenly came to me. That flower pot. When I dug my hand in, I simply grabbed everything that was there. But it must have been that little hussy's money box. I'd not only taken back my own money, I'd lifted her savings as well. When I thought of her going to her cineraria later that morning, expecting to find the money she'd so cleverly stolen from me, and finding nothing, not my money, and not her own either, I just couldn't help laughing. I mean, it's so perfect. The biter bit. And there's no point in telling me to send it back, Father. I don't know her name. I doubt if she's even called Melanie. I don't even know the name of the hotel she took me to. And all I can say is, it serves her damn well right.
Well, I must say, I tend to agree with the boy.
That's the trouble. That's what's so infuriating. He's so damned pleased with himself. Talk of a cat swallowing a canary.
Yes. But all's well that ends well.
But it hasn't ended well, Basil. Not as far as I'm concerned. Do you know what he said to me when he'd finished? He looked at me with those innocent eyes of his and he said, "You know, Father, I can't help thinking there was something wrong with the advice you gave me. You said don't gamble. Well, I did and made a packet. You said don't lend money. Well, I did. And I got it back. And you said don't have anything to do with women. Well, I did. And I made 6,000 francs on the deal." It's all very well for you fellows to laugh, but I'm in a damned awkward position, you know. The boy looked up to me. He respected what I said. Now, he looks on me as a drivelling old fool.
Well, you do look a bit of a damn fool, old man. Let's be honest about it.
I know, and I don't like it. It's so dashed unfair. Fate has no right to play tricks on people like that. After all, you must admit that I gave him good advice. The wretched boy ought to have had his fingers burnt, and he hasn't. Where's the justice or sense in that?
And indeed, there's no denying that Henry's advice to his son had been excellent. Yet if Nicky had followed it, he would have been much the poorer, not only in cash, but in experience. For in railing against fate, Henry was forgetting that the best gift the gods can bestow, worth infinitely more than cleverness or riches, is the gift they bestowed on Nicky, to be born lucky. And that's just one of those immutable facts of life.
In The Facts of Life by Somerset Maugham, Dirk Bogarde was the narrator, with Paul Rees as Nicky, Robert Lang as Henry, and Melanie Hudson as Melanie. Other parts were played by Geoffrey Whitehead, David Collings, Stephen Critchlow, Dennis Hawthorne, Roger May, Paul Jenkins, and Patience Tomlinson. The Facts of Life was dramatised by Neville Teller and directed by Janet Whittaker.